With the mic on, I would like to thank the organizers for the invitation to speak here. And I have to start with an apology, because I was asked to give repeat the talk I gave at IPAM, and I'm not going to do that for a variety of reasons. Not the least of which is that Emmanuel gave such great talks last week that there's just so many points of overlap, and I can't really, just any amplification I would give to the points he raised would be incremental. So to those of you who came here expecting to hear exactly the same talk that you heard at IPAM, I offer my heartfelt apologies for that. So you just missed being complimented on your great talks from last week. So I want to make sure you heard that. Okay. So this is an open Gromov-Whitney invariance. And I want to, this is an expository talk. And I want to just touch on some issues that Emmanuel didn't talk about but mentioned were an issue. So I want to give some kind of feel for what the problem is with really defining open string Gromov-Whitney invariance. There still is not a mathematical definition of this, and to do this, I want to just hopefully quickly review how you would do symplectic Gromov closed Gromov-Whitney invariance in symplectic geometry. And then after that, talk a little bit about relating to some speculative connections to what this might have to do with localization and these powerful techniques that we learned about last week, and then get to the another potentially very powerful tool in this subject, which is the idea of relative stable maps, developed by Jun Li. So closed string Gromov-Whitney invariance does have mathematical rigor. Relative stable maps has mathematical rigor, and they're both somehow related to open string Gromov-Whitney invariance that we still can't define. But hopefully, somewhere in between these is some hint at how to discuss this theory mathematically. Okay. So let me start with X. Let's say as a compact Kähler manifold of dimension n. So again, we'll mainly be thinking about Kolbe-Yau manifolds, but this is more general. We could also make this symplectic manifold with a almost complex structure. And what we want to look at is if we have a homology class, a genus, and a number of marked points, we have this moduli space that we talked about extensively, MGN bar X beta. So these are maps like this, where C has arithmetic genus G. It's connected. Nodal. The PR in the smooth locus of the curve C. And we have a finite group of automorphisms. So this is the object that we were talking about extensively last week. And so how do we define a virtual fundamental class? So let me just say it. So I realized, in preparing these talks, I was just drawing freely on what was done last week, but maybe not everybody was here last week. So I'll just put in a little bit more, and if I neglect to give an important definition, just please speak up. I'll add that. So what this is to be a homology class. Where D is the virtual dimension, as given by C1 of X dot beta plus the dimension, well, here I called it N, minus 3, 1 minus the genus, plus the number of marked points. And from here, we can define Gromov-Witten invariants. So for example, if D equals 0, For example, if there are no marked points and X is a Calabi-Yau threefold, then we can define virtual numbers. By just saying N beta G might be just the degree of this virtual fundamental class, and this is a rational number because of the automorphisms. We have to divide by automorphisms. More generally, we have evaluation maps.
Is the virtual fundamental class a rational?
Yes, it's a rational homology class. Yes. And I'll sketch an approach to a definition of those in this talk. There are evaluation maps which evaluate the map at the marked point, so that now if we have cohomology classes on X, one for each marked point, we can define Gromov-Witten invariants by taking the product of the pullbacks to get cohomology classes on the moduli space, which we can then cap with the virtual fundamental class, and then take the degree of the zero-dimensional component of this. And in so doing, we get our more general Gromov-Witten invariants, which are the same as would be computed in string theory. Okay, so again, I'm going to, in this talk, for the most part, going to be dropping marked points. They're the easiest part of it. They come along for the ride, and all the interesting invariants, just to repeat what was done last week, just to emphasize this point, is it's right in here, in the virtual fundamental class. Okay, so the approaches I usually use in understanding the virtual fundamental class, which are really useful for localization, are algebra-geometric constructions of virtual fundamental classes. Those you would use in doing closed string localization, as in last week's talks. But those don't seem to be well suited for proving things for open string Gromov-Witten invariants, which is our interest today. One special case that might be useful is if the Lagrangian is the fixed point locus of an anti-holomorphic involution. Then there's some hope that algebra-geometric techniques could be applied to give a simpler construction of the invariants in those special cases. But in the cases of interest in string theory, L isn't of that form. So I'm not really going to use that. One thing that we will see, though, is that the deformation theory of a holomorphic map with Lagrangian boundary conditions is virtually the deformation theory of a fixed point locus of an anti-holomorphic involution. In a sense that I'll make uh, make precise later on. Okay. Yeah, so okay, so let's try to go ahead and deform this map. Again, this is probably well known to many or most people in the audience, but I want to do this to fix ideas. So when we do this with Lagrangian boundary conditions, it won't be a big surprise. And for simplicity, let's just suppose that C is irreducible. Okay. So what you would do here is I think of F as being a point in my moduli space of stable maps. C is an irreducible genus G curve. So say smooth genus G. And what we look at now is we embed this, and just to drop the subscripts, inside some bigger space, WG bar, which space you take depends on what you want, you know, what you want to do. These are not necessarily holomorphic maps. So they might have a certain number of derivatives which are integrable, or whatever you might want. And what we want to do is we want to go ahead and find this locus inside here. Okay. So to do that, we want to solve the equation d bar f equals 0. And to do that, d bar f is a section of a certain bundle. Well, I guess let me... So on this locus WG, where here I have the irreducible sources, is on here we have a bundle script E with fiber over F, the appropriately regular sections, depending on what we're doing there, of the 0, 1 forms on C, tensor the pullback of the tangent bundle to X. And then D bar is interpreted as a section of E. So we want to find the zero locus of a section of this bundle. And what you can do is you can, using the metric, you can go ahead and decompose E into eigenspaces of the D bar Laplacian. No, these are TX. These are holomorphic tangent bundle. Yes. Yeah. Or these are suitably differentiable, depending on how differentiable you make this. Is what you want to do. It's whatever differentiability is implied by your assumption here. So you decompose E into eigenspaces of the Laplacian, and what you get is a picture which I'll draw like this. If I start drawing pictures of the eigenvalues, I can get some things like this. I might have a certain number of zero modes that then we might have extra zero modes at our point F. You know, is that the it's well known this is one of the problems with the with why you don't have a fundamental class that works is because the dimensions of the moduli space changes as you suddenly get extra zero modes. So what you do is you pick a cutoff epsilon so that in some neighborhood, let's say V sub F, that this has constant dimension. So let me just call this E sub F. The WG is infinite dimensional.
Infinite.
Yes.
So the E has infinite rank?
E has infinite, this E has infinite rank, and this D bar is an operator with Fredholm linearization, and this is the usual story. And what we're trying to do is to try to go ahead and get a finite dimensional model of this. The E sub lambdas have finite rank, yes, but they can grow, and there's no because the space of these with the irreducible Fs is not compact. There's no global bound on this, so that the this bound that we can do can only be done locally. And as usual, this is taking a lot longer than I planned on. So. Okay, but this is good. This fixes ideas. Okay, so now what we do is we can go ahead and take D bar and write this. I hope this will be clear. Into its component with eigenvalues bigger than epsilon. Plus its component with eigenvalues less than or equal to epsilon. And now what we see is that the implicit function theorem, because of the Fredholm property, says that I want to match someone else's notation, so maybe let me call this U sub F. And let me call V sub F the zero locus of this section and the point of making this finite dimensional. The implicit function theorem says that this is a manifold. And then we have if we take E sub F, sorry about the notation, let me just replace E sub F restricted to V sub F just notationally by E sub F itself. I apologize for getting my notation wrong initially. This is the sum of lambda less than or equal to epsilon restricted to V sub F, then D bar lambda less than or equal to E is a section of E sub F. Oh, sorry. is a section of the now redefined E sub F, which is a bundle on this finite dimensional manifold. And now by construction, the zero locus of this finite dimensional section is equal to the intersection of our moduli space that we want with this local neighborhood. Okay, so the point of this long discussion is that the moduli space in this well-known way can be written as these locally as the zero locus of a section of a bundle inside the finite dimensional space. So these are smooth bundles. It's a smooth bundle on a smooth space, but the zero locus is not well behaved. U sub f is inside W sub F. Hope I've got my notation straight now. This is inside here. Here's a subset, and we want to know the equations of this subset inside the space of all maps. And that what you can do is, V sub F, yeah, absolutely, thanks. Absolutely. Inside this finite dimensional space, thanks. I mean that this is an orthogonal decomposition with respect to the metric. So I go ahead and look at the components in those eigenspaces, and to go ahead and say that this vanishes says that the components in the bigger eigenspaces and the smaller eigenspaces must both vanish. So I just do it one step at a time. So the first step is infinitely many conditions, which gets us down from this infinite dimensional manifold, this infinite dimensional Banach manifold, to a finite dimensional smooth manifold. And then on that space, see, we've lost holomorphicity in this whole discussion. This is just a manifold construction.
Okay.
Right, but notationally I promoted this to a section. D bar in this one, when I d bar f, I was using to do d bar f, but d bar f equals zero, globally becomes becomes a section of this bundle. Okay. So what we're doing is we're just looking at how the number of zero modes can change in moduli. So this is the story, and what we have if F prime is nearby some map, in other words, if F prime is a map near F and in the moduli space, we can do the same construction as F prime. And the way that this works, we can do this in such a way that if we look at this picture, as we move further away, we can have fewer zero modes. So what will happen is we can do this whole construction in such a way that we get a diagram like this of inclusions. if we're just trying to go ahead and move away. We have fewer moduli as we move away, but we have fewer obstructions. In other words, because we could just take a smaller epsilon. Look at that picture. So here we might have d bar lambda less than or equal to epsilon prime. Here I might have d bar lambda less than or equal to epsilon. And we have some compatibilities. Okay. So what this is, this took way too long. This is a formalism by Fukaya and Ono called a Kuranishi structure. On the moduli space, with ambient space W bar. Okay. So let me just say what this notion is. That the notion is that we have, so M bar is a union of so we have a collection of V sub F embedded in our space W bar. This is what we mean by saying that W bar is an ambient space. We have a mapping inside here. We have our M bar. We have bundles EF sections SF, which are our D bar. And is that SF inverse of zero, if I call this, let's say, psi f, let maybe vf prime its homeomorphic image, and that this is equal to vf prime intersect mg bar. Plus the compatibilities when F prime is near F. Okay, so what I've sketched in roughly twice the amount of time I plan to take was the simplest case of how you would construct a Kuranishi structure on the smooth locus. So I think I'd better not say anything about the other cases, because it's, this is really the point. And then there's a formal procedure which is to go ahead and deform these sections SF by suitably compatible sections of one important point, two important points. Just come back here. Uh, We have a the virtual dimension, of course, is the dimension of V lambda VF minus the rank of EF. And this is just the same as the algebra geometric computation. This is the dimension. First, we go ahead and vary the source curve and the marked points if we had any, plus the order characteristic of F star TX, because that's what we're doing, is we're geometrically computing the index of this of this operator in this bundle. And this is what it was claimed to be. So I guess here I just put n back in because it comes along for the ride. If this were negative dimension formally, this would be some automorphisms which we would use to modify the problem. So there are automorphisms going on here which play an important role, but I've suppressed them as well. Okay, and so we have this virtual dimension is independent of F. And the second point is that we have these coronation neighborhoods near any point in our moduli space, not just the ones with irreducible source curves. But anyhow, we just get this whole structure. This is obviously more technical, but again, the idea is just to deform D bar and get down to a finite dimensional space. Okay, so finally, the point of all this formalism we now have this formalism where we since n bar is compact, we can cover with finitely many VF we can choose generic but compatible in a certain sense with respect to the Kuranishi structure, perturbations of our sections in our local models. Okay, there's some technical things you have to shrink to make things relatively compact, use some bump functions, etc. But we go ahead and construct this so that what we get is that we get a zero locus of the deformed local sections patched to a cycle. In the ambient space. So once you're in this formalism, which seems like a little cumbersome, you have a bunch of data. The point is that this is what controls this is how you go ahead and control the local deformation theory and make it something global, that you can go ahead and get a virtual fundamental class. And this represents, for our purposes, we can work in this space because we have evaluation maps here. So we can go ahead and use this for the virtual fundamental class. Said differently, if I had the virtual fundamental class given by algebraic geometry, let's say, and I would want to go ahead and push forward into here, the image would be the cycle that we get. So what I think of this is that I have my so I get a virtual class for a moduli space in this space. And the point is that there are many choices that were made in here, and the cycle class doesn't depend on choices. So in
This is not the way that virtual fundamental classes were first constructed, but it's all the same idea. You take D bar, you deform it in a certain sense. People had different ways to go ahead and deform it that was right for certain procedures, and this is the only way I know to go ahead and take this and get some kind of notion for relative stable maps. So I'll present that here. Any questions? Yeah, this is a symplectic version of a perfect obstruction theory, because what you get, so it looks like a perfect obstruction theory. What you have is you have this the tangents locally. You have the tangent space of VF will go to EF. Is what you have here, and this is only locally defined. But for instance, this would give a well defined element of KO of the moduli space. So this plays the role of the perfect obstruction theory in algebraic geometry. Oh, what's that? It could be, but this is a result. This is because this is known to have a virtual fundamental class directly on here by other techniques. It could, but it doesn't. Yeah, that's a.
I'm asking why.
Oh, why? Oh, I see. Why it. Why it doesn't. Right. Why it doesn't. I have to think about that. Yeah, good question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let me say this. In the case where D is zero, it doesn't, which is our main interest. So let's just say that, and then we can. Okay. The other, I guess the other important technical point I should have raised here is that we need to have this be, since we're in the real world, not the complex world, we have to worry about an orientation to define the cycle class. So here, the point is that if I take this determinant, the determinant line of this is oriented globally, i.e. a trivial real line. We're going to be in the right. Okay, so now let's go on to relative maps. Take this to be Lagrangian, but not necessarily special Lagrangian. Okay. So now the moduli space has more data on it. Okay. So what all these things are is that G is a genus. H is the number of holes. Beta is a relative homology class. Gamma I are homology classes on the Lagrangian, such that the boundary of beta is the sum of the gamma I. And mu is a Maslov index, which will vanish for special Lagrangians and Calabi-Yau threefolds. But just to say what this, so this is going to be some moduli space. And this so here again, I could put on marked points, but I'm not going to put them in now. So this is a bordered Riemann surface. Of genus G with a certain number of holes, it's allowed to be nodal. It could be nodal at an interior point, or it could be nodal at a boundary point. So, and it's the boundary nodes that are a problem here. That the relative homology class of sigma pushes forward to beta. The boundary holes are labeled. And these can also degenerate. And F star Ri is gamma I. Finally, mu is the Maslov index of the pair, and although this arises in symplectic geometry, there's a nice algebra-geometric way to see this using complex geometry. What you can do is you can go ahead and take the complex double of sigma, or so we go ahead and take two copies of this with the opposite orientation glued along their common boundary with the reversed orientations to glue together. So so we take something like this, and we get this. And then we glue, then F star TL is totally real. So we can glue F star TX on sigma to F star TX bar on sigma bar by aligning their common subbundle F star TL, tensor C. Then using that as our gluing and getting it together. So this is a complex vector bundle. So let's call this F star TX C, which need not be the same thing as the pullback of the tangent bundle. So the notation is perhaps a little misleading. It will be in the case of a special Lagrangian, but in general it isn't. And then the Maslov index is simply the degree of this line bundle. And then the theorem in I don't know. Is it okay?
So is okay. This mu not vanishing without the bent topological on that one?
No.
Yes, I'll know.
Okay.
So the A model
may or may not be offshore conformity with all your homeowners for meeting. So offshore conformity can improve the space in your zone. So here is my view of the
Yeah, it's just not, definitely not, yeah.
I don't know an interpretation of
that. It's a bar, boundary bar.
So would you expect topological invariance? Yeah, because they... Okay, so Melissa, you proved that that this space has a Kuranishi structure. With corners, so what corners means is that instead of the ambient spaces being manifolds, these local VFs being manifolds, is that the VFs are manifolds with corners, the local models. Because we've already seen how we can get a boundary, and we can get a corner by just having more degeneration on the, just having one, for instance, if one boundary circle becomes three, then we have two real boundary strata intersecting. So it's a little complicated, but the point is that formally the deformation theory is very well controlled because what she does systematically is to show that the deformation theory is really virtually given by just taking taking half of a complex deformation theory by this. There's a lot of technical work in there. This is by no means trivial. So there's a Kuranishi structure with corners and an ambient space. I'll just call it W bar of not necessarily holomorphic relative maps. Okay, and this is orientable if L is spin, which in our interest in Calabi-Yau threefolds, this is a three manifold, it will be spin. So we'll have an orientable Kuranishi structure. Again, it's exactly the same idea. We're just deforming D bar. We get all these bundles. The only thing is that on the boundary, we just have to be careful to go ahead and take our bundles to have typical fibers, to have classes in this bundle with Lagrangian boundary conditions. So it's exactly the same. Say again? X need not be spin. X need not be spin. Just L is spin. Yeah. Okay, so that's the only condition you need for this.
When you deform, the zeros of these sections are manifolds with corners.
No? Right.
So local sections X.
That's the problem. So you don't have cycle class. You don't have homology classes to represent them. So I wish I could have found a faster way to say this. That's the difference, right there. Is that now you go ahead and take the same Kuranishi structure, you perturb sections, you get a subset which is not a cycle, and it fails to be a cycle along the boundary because that's where our representatives are not manifolds. So what we get is for free. Yeah, the boundary of the cycle is on the boundary. It was so. So again, I didn't do.
Is that a healthy cycle or complex?
it is a relative cycle relative to the boundary. Yeah. So what? So if I had I'd manage my time better, what I would have said is that when you go ahead and take these local sections, you can go ahead and take simplicial complexes representing these, et cetera, glue them together to get a cycle. Here, what you can do is you can go ahead and take simplicial complexes whose faces contain the boundary strata, and still construct singular chains in the same way.
The important point is W bar itself.
Right, W bars are manifold with corners, yes. Right.
That
would be wonderful to do such a thing. I know of no way to. The reason I wouldn't expect that is because the. I don't expect an invariant that's independent about some rules about how to go ahead and glue to form that doubling. So it may be that one way to go ahead and take the framing ambiguity is to go ahead and turn that into gluing rules to go ahead and do a multi-doubling. That's one possibility, but you can't get it for free because we know from experience that we just don't get a well-defined open string Gromov-Witten invariant. Yeah, but let me go on. So what we get is we get an element, we get a virtual relative cycle class where here D is the virtual dimension where D is this virtual dimension. Question?
This whole construction didn't assume any torus action.
No torus action whatsoever, yeah. Okay, so right now this may look very good, but now let me just point out that this is very bad because if d equals zero, this is we get an invariant in here, but there were much easier ways to go ahead and define invariants in that group. So there's the problem. Okay, so the real work begins, and nobody knows how to do this. So the real work. Is how to control the deformation of D bar near the boundary. That's the whole mathematical new idea that's needed to go ahead and really define an invariant. And this has only been done in one case. And that's the case where there's a torus action, again by Melissa Liu and her thesis. Right. Yeah. So the question. Yeah. So maybe to phrase the question. Well, I guess I don't know how to phrase the question. I mean, the question is, how do you go ahead and match what string theory, the invariance that string theory is getting? So can you define equivalence classes? So for example, suppose you take perturbations, where the zeros stay away from the boundary. Define an equivalence relation on the set of perturbations such that you get the same invariant, and then classify those equivalence relations. That's a well-defined mathematical question. And then I won't conjecture this, but one question is this the same as Z, the number of framings you have? That's a question. I don't have enough evidence to make that conjecture, but that would be very satisfying if that were true.
It's clear even that it's a discrete set of
choices. It's not clear that it's a discrete set of choices, yeah. A framing on the Lagrangian, on L.
Does such a framing give you a deformation that stays away from the boundary to an absolute
complex? I don't know. There is no construction for how to take a framing and how to go ahead and get a class of perturbations from that. This is all completely wide open. Okay. Oh, of course, the, yes, oh, so I didn't state her theorem yet. So the theorem, well, I guess I can't state it yet. So now suppose there exists an S1 action on the pair XL, so preserving L, which is free on L. And by the way, I have never in this talk assumed that L was connected. So this applies to, you know, more general things we're doing in Rajan duality. Suppose that we have an S1 action on here, which is free. Then what we can do is that the, okay, so rather than state this formally as a theorem, what Melissa Yu does is she shows that the S1 action is that the Kuranishi structure can be chosen to be S1 equivariant. So that means that the S1 action, that these local spaces VF are S1 invariant, that the bundles are S1 invariant, the sections are S1 equivariant, and so on. The compatibilities are S1 equivariant, everything you can imagine is S1 equivariant. Okay, and then what we get is this induces, so this restricts to a Kuranishi structure on the boundary. And this descends to a Kuranishi structure on the boundary modulo S1. Because the boundary is also S1 invariant. If you have one of these degenerate holes, you move around by S1, that's still a degenerate hole. So let me just call this, this Kuranishi, so now assume that we're in the case of interest for Calabi-Yau threefolds, assume that the virtual dimension is zero. So X is a Calabi-Yau threefold, L is special Lagrangian. Then we have exactly the same obstruction data. The only thing is that our ambient space drops dimension by two, one for the boundary hypersurface and two for the quotient. So the virtual dimension of the Kuranishi structure here is negative 2. So what this means is that we can perturb our D bar question? Real dimension, yes. Real dimension minus 2. We can perturb the D bar compatibly with the Kuranishi structure on M and the Kuranishi structure on here. And now part of this flexible, now that we have this flexible machinery, we can now have transverse sections here are going to be empty. So trivially, a transverse compatible perturbation. Maybe I didn't use the word transverse; I said generic. Compatible perturbation gives us a relative cycle completely missing the boundary. And that's what we need. So we get a rational number, and the theorem that she proves that this is independent of choices. So we have, just from the choice of an S1 action, we have a rational number. This is so there is one mathematical definition in one case for defining an open string Grom of Witten invariant. Okay, so again, it's a special case. And to me, this raises so many great questions. Yeah.
It depends on both choices?
It depends, choices, I'm sorry. Once the S1 action is fixed, of course. Yeah, sorry. In other words, this is an invariant of X, L, and the S1 action. Okay, so there's the natural conjecture. Suppose that does this agree with what you compute by localization? I don't. So, but again, this is really the easy part. This you, in hindsight, you maybe only almost get for free. Is that what you want to do? You see, and this doesn't work any bigger. Once we had a two-dimensional virtual fundamental class, then you wouldn't be able to use this technique just to formally keep yourself away from the boundary. So what's really needed? What you really need is a deeper analysis of the Kuranishi structure near the boundary. Because what you have here is that you have a bundle on this space. You have a bundle, the obstruction bundle. Let me just call these V prime. So what we're doing is we're building. So we have these spaces. We have their lifts inside here, which are codimension one inside these spaces, with all these compatibilities, and what this computation says is that the rank of EF prime is the dimension of VF prime minus 2. So what you're doing is you start your perturbation process in this game of Kuranishi structures by making finite dimensional choices, and just at the bottom up you just start with just choosing a generic section of here that's compatible with all the other sections, and already you've missed the zero locus. Then you take those sections, pull them back, and extend to a section of this bundle in a compatible way. So it's very formal, but you can't do it unless you have this whole machinery of Kuranishi structures, which so with this okay. Because then, if you had the the dimensions at least two, then so what you always have is that the dimension of the Kuranishi structure here is 2 less than the original Kuranishi structure.
No, but the free circle action should mean that the Euler class of that obstruction bundle vanishes on the boundary. So even if the dimension doesn't work out, you should still have non-vanishing sections.
Yeah, I don't see anything. and that's much simpler, but yeah. I guess these bundles don't live globally, so you don't really have a, I guess I don't know. So you have these local bundles that, with these, they're on non-compact VFs. I don't know, but yeah, something like that would be great if that works. If X is toric and the action on L is not free, then this theorem doesn't work. But you're saying, are there examples of such an L?
Yeah.
So the I guess so. The examples. Where L is smooth, I mean, so you can have singular L, where you degenerate to the fixed point, and in a sense, that's part of the moduli space. But of all L. But I don't know any smooth examples. I wouldn't be surprised at all, just having watched history unfold, if there's a GLSM version of this, you know, waiting to be understood and then simplify everything. But nobody's really thought about that seriously. Well, this concludes the first half of my talk. Okay, so I guess when Greg talked a few years ago, so there was this mythical nth talk. I forgot what N was. So in the mythical second talk, I didn't plant those questions in the audience. That would have been a great lead into the second part of the talk, which is let me just say a few words and then stop and sob that I didn't get to this, is that let me just say how Lee and Song computed open string Gromov of Witten invariants. So back to Emanuel's case, that was studied extensively last week. You have X is the total space of this bundle, and the Lagrangian that was considered, I think the coordinates used were Z, U, and V, were some local coordinates here. And the Lagrangian was defined by saying let Z equals 1, and something like U equals Z bar V bar. If I didn't remember right, that's probably close enough to be equivalent. Okay, so this is the Lagrangian. What Li and Song did is that they said, well, you have, you know, this being S1 times R2, it has a modulus, and the modulus we can just see geometrically, there it is. We just take the circle to have radius R. So we have a family of Lagrangians. And what you do is, now suppose that we're looking at open string Gromov Witten invariants. So we have, here's my CP1. here's infinity. And here I'll take a disk of radius r, which I'm going to take to grow that way. And what they noticed is that if you go ahead and take such invariants, and suppose you had windings, you know, W1, W2, so, but the maps are given by locally by, you know, z equals y to the wi, where y would be a coordinate here and z would be some coordinate here. Got this backwards. I say windings, so I'm already on borrowed time. What you can do is now you can just glue a disk in. You can just glue disks everywhere by taking z to the wi, and you get a map to a compact with a compact source. So you have, so in other words, our Lagrangians are here. We get a mapping from mg bar, let's say with a certain number of holes, xlr, and then winding data, let's say degree d, winding data wi, where here d is the sum of wi. And this maps to a space of relative Gromov-Witten invariants with the same winding data encoded in a different way, where D is the divisor at infinity. The fiber over infinity in the total space. So this is a complex divisor inside a complex manifold. And that the union over all R of the images what this becomes a set of stable maps in the ordinary sense to P1 ramified over infinity, so this is degree D, with ramifications WI. There's a question? Ah, yes, yes. Absolutely, thank you. Degree D, genus G. So what we get is we get a space of maps with of ordinary compact Riemann surfaces with no boundary, just like before, but now we have an extra condition that we have this ramification inherited by our construction. And the point is that this is not compact. Unfortunately. But it has a compactification what we do is we expand x to achieve the compactification. So schematically what we do is if here's a picture of x and here's a divisor, we blow up x along the, we blow up x along well, it's not a blow up, I guess. So we go ahead and take a P1 bundle over here. This would be P of the trivial bundle on D plus the normal bundle to D and x. This is a rank 2 vector bundle, so its projective bundle is a P1 bundle over D. And what we do is we study, and then we can repeat this process as many times as necessary to build more and more P1 bundles, and we study stable maps to here. And in the second lecture, I will give this formalism and make this more precise. The point is that is if X has a torus action, we can use localization to compute virtual numbers, because there's again a virtual fundamental class, not surprisingly compatible with the obstruction theory of this, in a limiting sense, is the obstruction theory of this, at least on this component. But to go ahead and really define virtual numbers, we need this compactification. So in a sense, this compactification forgets the extra data that we need to define an invariant, because this space is not compact. So if you want to go ahead and use relative morphisms to understand the ambiguity of open string Gromovitz invariants, you have the boundary issue to deal with, which in this case is just bubbling off this. And by the way, I know of nothing, I have no guesses in string theory. It's an interesting question to me of what in string theory these kinds of, these are instanton corrections to. I can't even, you know, you can't do A and B at the same time. So the dimensions are just all wrong. So, the other thing I will talk about in the mythical second talk is some work of Jim Bryan and Rahul Pandurapande, where what they do is they go ahead and use relative stable maps and localization to go ahead and compute virtual relative invariants for all curves embedded in Calabi-Yau threefolds. And what you find is that the vertex of Aganagich, Clem, Marino, Vafa is equal to a sum of disconnected pieces plus, I'll just call this the Brian Pandurapande connected piece. So this is I guess I should just say that this is a conjecture, because I've only checked this in low degree for low degree multiple covers, because I don't have access to enough data to check. So I'll stop there. Yes. Do you have a follow-up question? So let me just give the simplest example. If you look at the contribution, so in the vertex you have this the contribution, you compute the Gromov-Witten invariance for maps to here, where let's just say the degree is one on each component. And the all genus expansion would be that the vertex turns out to be one plus I'll just write it in terms of G string. So this is how you would compute the vertex in this example. So these different variables, but if you convert back from Chern-Simons to string theory language, you get this. And then this over here, this is the Brian Pandurapande cylinder amplitude. So what this really is they're computing relative invariance for two marked points, which they go ahead and compute that relative amplitude in all genus they compute is on the nose one. And then this over here, this is just this is the disconnected piece. which is take a disk, you know, a disk to here, which contributes one of those factors and a disk to there. And each of those disconnected pieces inductively would be computed by Brian and Pandurapande to go ahead and get this this on the nose. So they go ahead and compute a full TQFT, show that there's one degree by degree, and they're but they're only able to go ahead and compute degree by degree, and last time I checked, they're up to degree four. That's what they're doing. But the vertex information is much more cumbersome because you have, so what you do is you have this degeneration. You have a degeneration like this that you can use to compare amplitudes, but then you lose this disconnected information that you go ahead and get inductively. So it's actually much easier to compute the connected pieces using this method than all pieces using the vertex, but they should be the same, I guess. Yes?
So what happens when g-string
is 2 pi? When g-string is 2 pi? Well, then you don't use this expression. Yeah, I'm not being facetious. This is a generating functional, and there's no convergence whatsoever. Yes. This should be. I'm not sure what else to say. Do you want to add something? This represents, so the vertex computes maps with disconnected sources. So this is a map from a union of two disks, one disk mapping to there, and another disk mapping to there. And each of those disk amplitudes is this. I'm just looking at degree one mappings. So they're just an isomorphism. So we have, yeah. So it's an isomorphism here and an isomorphism here for genus zero, but then we have the higher genus bubbling, and then this, as you did in your talks, is the, and Brian and Pandurapande use their techniques also to get the same answer, of course. What's that? Yeah, they use a relative moduli space to go ahead and do the same computation. And actually, well, to be fair, what they get is a different answer than Lee and Song got. They were off by a sign, but there's two minus signs that cancel out and give this, that agree with the vertex. Anyway. Right, so I'm thinking, well, the question is, and I don't really have enough data to really conjecture, I just, you know, this is something I would like to check, but I just can't, because I have to do a lot of programming to reproduce those computations, but, so what it appears to be is that you can go ahead and break this up that you can degenerate this to that, you can also degenerate this in three different ways to here, and you can go ahead and have these, and that the amplitudes for each of these things should combine to go ahead and give one vertex. Because what this is, this, yeah. Or, yeah. The image. So like in Emmanuel's talk, you can have. Right. Yeah, but you can, right? But you can have, you know, like these come up in the fixed point loci if you have the torus action. Right.
I just want to have some other facts. So one point you computed a very special kind of piece of story, Calabria people, and the other one is to compute this local pair of fans.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You say that's actually the same question. It's the same
moment, essentially. Yeah, we're going to learn a lot in the next few years. I don't know. I mean, they're morally the same question. Is that when you're computing these local invariants, they're morally limits of open string Gromov-Witten invariants, And there's no theorem that says that they're the same thing. Just it's just fun to go ahead and compute all examples. So any time that you have a you know, case by case, you can prove that the vertex respects degeneration with something that can be proven, then gluing is proven. Because there's a gluing theorem for relative Gromov-Witten invariance. So this now gives an easy proof of, for example, you know, computing Gromov-Witten invariance for multiple covers of chains of P1s, up to whatever degree you can go ahead and do this. And this is not torque, and this is now proven. You know, again, up to degree 1 and 2. So
maybe I'll make a brief comment. Mm-hmm. These Kornishi structures and similar ideas occur in Donaldson's work on self-dual angles. And there you have this kind of abstract perturbation to construct this with moduli space, but also some more geometric perturbations of the metric. And there is a case when you get a similar phenomenon to these open strings where it's not compact, which is a circle condition on the second homology. And there you did find these discrete invariants. So it's not a topological
invariant
independent of the metric, but it depends on further discrete choices.
Uh-huh.
So there is at least a model.
Good. I'd like to hear more. Yeah,
so it's important to look at the concrete perturbations depending on the metric, and then you discover that the
homology as well. Right. Yeah, this machinery of Kornishi structure is not the essential point. It's just a mechanism for controlling it. And in symplectic geometry, the other ideas like Li and Tian, Ruan, Siebert all had similar ideas. How to do this.